That's funny. Does anybody listen to this program except for my wife?
I do.
Yeah. Yes. Well, at least my wife is listening to this
right.
show.
Right. I can be your wife.
Okay.
Would you like me to be your wife?
Oh, boy.
Does that get confusing?
I just don't know where to go with that.
I don't know either.
Yeah.
How does that work?
You know, whatever floats your boat.
I guess so.
If that would make you happy. I got skirts.
No, that wouldn't make me happy.
We should stop this.
We should probably
You're
stop
You're listening that. To WHUS 91.7 FM. I am Fran Storch, and I am here with my, sort of spouse, Ron. And we're going to entertain you with some Radio Naturopath for the next hour. And, yeah, you don't always know what's going to come out of our mouths. But hopefully it will be some information that is interesting to you. Anyway, so this week, first of all, let me just say that you can listen to this show. If you can't listen to the whole show right now, you can listen to it at other times because it will be recorded and it is a podcast. And you can find previous shows at whus.org. And you scroll over Talk and just click on Radio Naturopath and you can listen to many episodes way back. Many episodes. All right, I'll stop. And then you can... Also, listen to Radio Naturopath on iTunes. If you search on iTunes, you can search for Radio Naturopath or you can search for my name and you can find us and you can subscribe to us and it'll get delivered nicely into your iTunes podcast queue and you can listen to us anytime. During the show, we recommend your calls and comments and questions, and you can call us at 860-486-9487. That's 860-486-9487. You can text us also at 860-486-9487, and you can email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. Please don't text or email and drive.
No, don't do that.
No.
That's
so if
not,
you're listening in the car,
not
just
safe.
Listen.
Healthy, and you're listening to a health show.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So you shouldn't do that.
And we want you to be able to listen next week or
plus,
anytime.
You might run over a pedestrian or a cyclist. Not good.
Oh, and we don't want that. Wait, that's for the next show.
Oh, okay.
Actually, that counts because it's a health show. So okay. Anyway, I wanted to riff on this Time Magazine article that came out a couple of months ago, and it was a nice article called "The Weight Loss Trap," and I like to talk about fat loss and the ease and difficulty of fat loss. And most people find fat loss difficult because the way you got to the weight that you're at is because of your lifestyle and because of your habits. And so if you're having difficulty changing your lifestyle and your habits, it's going to be difficult for stuff to change in your body. But if you're doing something now and it isn't working, you have to do something else. And that's kind of how that works. So and it's like anything that's sort of an addiction or a habit change or a lifestyle change, practice makes perfect. And the thing is with fat loss, one of the things about fat loss that is so, so difficult is you decide you're overweight. You look in the mirror one day and you're like, I don't like the size of my belly. I don't like how I'm fitting into my clothes. I want to do something about it. And you decide to do something about it. And the problem is, it's not like if you quit smoking, the day after you quit smoking, you have completely quit smoking. The problem is over. Yes, you're going to detox a little bit and you're going to cough up extra mucus and your body's going to do some healing. But that's going to take a couple of weeks maybe and you're going to feel a whole lot better. And then you're done. And there's no like looking in the mirror seeing your body weight change. But the thing with fat loss, like my buddy naturopath Jay Tita says, fat loss is neither linear, fair, nor predictable. So, and that's the way it is. And so when I have people around me who practice fat shaming, I get very annoyed because there are people like, well, she should be able to do something about that. Well, it's not that easy. You can't just turn it off and expect to lose lots of fat very quickly because you also have to figure out how you're going to do it.
And that looking in the mirror and, looking to see if you're seeing results, don't do that. Don't do that. You'll get the results. Just, you don't want to every week look in the mirror and say, hey, look, I'm not losing any weight or whatever. You're not going to notice, it over time, yes, but not You can obsess yourself to death on that.
That's true. And so the thing is, those kinds of tips and tricks to help you lose weight, whether you look in the mirror, whether you use a scale, whether you weigh yourself or not, one of the things that people who successfully lose fat do is they do weigh themselves at intervals. Some of them weigh themselves every day. Some of them weigh themselves once a week. Some of them weigh themselves once a month. It's different for different people. Some people don't weigh themselves at all. I don't like to weigh myself because I just got too attached to the scale during the course of my life and over time. So I prefer not to weigh myself. Basically, I get weighed when I go to the doctor, and that's it.
Once a month is good, I guess.
It's okay if you want to do that.
If you want to do
it. Once a month is fine for you. Daily is fine. If daily is fine for you, that's fine for you. It's different for different people. And that's the whole point. So this is interesting because in 2009, there was an article in Time magazine that talked about how exercise was worthless. Exercise doesn't help with fat loss. Yeah. Well, basically, that was the take home on the article, that it said that it really doesn't matter if you exercise because you don't really gain that much from exercise. It doesn't really make you lose weight. And, of course, all of us in the fitness industry got up in arms about that.
Right.
So here's the deal, though. Fat loss is 70% in the kitchen. You can't out-exercise a poor diet, to a point. If you're a professional cyclist, you might be able to do that.
Right.
But what I suggest is that, you know, one of the things that they're saying is, like, if you go to the gym, say you go to the gym and you lift weights for an hour and, you know, you pair that with a 10-minute walk on the treadmill, you might burn 200 calories doing that. That's not a lot of calories. And so you're at that caloric burn level and possibly intensity level where it doesn't make that much difference. And what does make a difference is it does make a difference what you're doing. One of the things that we do see is that, so there's a registry. There's a registry of people in the country who have lost more than 30 pounds and kept it off. It's the, it's part of the National Institutes of Health, and they study. It's the National Weight Control Registry. It's an ongoing study of 10,000 people who've lost 30 pounds or more and kept it off. And there are certain things that those people have in common. And I hate to say it, but one of the things that they have in common is that they do, in fact, exercise.
Right.
People who keep weight off do exercise. And it may not. So the thing is, the benefits of exercise around fat loss aren't necessarily the caloric burn that you get in one exercise bout. It goes a lot deeper than that. And I'll see if I can try to outline some of those things for you. So one of the things that happens is, so say you do an exercise bout, and it doesn't even matter which one, whether you do, whether you're just a walker, I say that just a walker as though that's a just, because my goodness, if most of my patients walked most days of the week, they would be a lot fitter and a lot healthier.
Walking's amazing.
Most of my patients don't. Now you, we walked up to Horse Barn Hill the other day and you criticized us for not walking fast enough, which was silly. And yet we were trying to enjoy a stroll up to Horse Barn Hill. Nobody was competing. It was kind of interesting. But anyway, I watch my mother. So my mother walks, and my mother walks at a reasonable pace. She doesn't, sometimes she walks somewhat fast, but she certainly walks at a pace that I can keep up with. But she walks pretty much every day. Maybe she skips a day here and there if she's busy, but if she's not busy and she's feeling healthy, she's out. And she doesn't get derailed either. She doesn't like say, well, I had some stuff going on, so I stopped walking. Unless it's a health issue, or unless, you know, when my father passed, there was a little while where she didn't do as much walking. But she's back to it. She doesn't get derailed. And she doesn't do anything special. She doesn't do intervals. Sometimes she walks longer. Sometimes she walks shorter. Sometimes she walks a little faster, a little slower. But she doesn't do any kind of rigorous program. She just does what she does. And but she's consistent. All year, almost every day of the year, she goes for a walk. And my mother is fit and she's healthy and she's at a healthy weight for her. And that's all she does, walk. So I want to shout that out to you. you don't necessarily have to go to the gym. You don't necessarily have to do something specific. That the key to keeping exercise in your life is consistency. You have to put it into your life and leave it there. And ultimately, in the end, it doesn't matter which exercise you do. The best exercise for you is, guess what? It's the one you'll do, whatever that is. And whatever you do to make it easier for yourself to exercise is going to be helpful for you. And so things that make it more easier for you to exercise is if you, first of all, if you do something you like or love even, if you do something that is a hobby as well as an exercise. So I like to ride my bike because there's so many other things I like about riding my bike. You know, it's social, it's fun. I get to go on adventures. I get to go to neat cafes. So there's a lot of things about riding a bike beyond just the exercise itself that appeal to me. If you like to dance, dancing is social. Dancing, you get to hear exciting music. It's cheery. There are things like that. Anything that you do, if you have a buddy, if you have somebody to do it along with, the social aspect can keep you motivated. So anything you can do to make it easier. And then there's the location of your exercise. If it's too hard for you to get to a gym, it's a good idea to have something you can do inside of your home. And whether that's a piece of equipment, whether it's a DVD or a video, or there's online subscriptions to fitness that you can get where you pay so much per month. And you can get an online subscription to something, and they have all kinds of exercises that you can stream on your computer and display it on your TV if you have a smart TV, or if you have a way to for your TV to communicate with your tablet or your laptop. Then you can put those on your TV and you can exercise to those. There's always the good old DVD, or even if you have a VCR, you can watch tapes and do those too. So any exercise that you do will be helpful. So the thing about exercise, the thing that makes exercise helpful for fat loss, again, part of it is that you do burn more calories, but it's not just that. Your body changes from exercise in a lot of ways. One of the things that happens is you become more insulin sensitive when you exercise. So when you're eating all the time and running around, if you have increased insulin sensitivity, insulin, which is a very important traffic director hormone, can bond to your cells more readily and put sugar into those cells. And that takes the sugar out of your blood. So the less of that sugar is going to be used as fat. If insulin doesn't bond as well to your cells, then it's floating around. It's going to see that it can't bond to your cells. It's not going to put as much sugar into your cells. And it's going to see the sugar that's in your bloodstream, turn it into fat, and then you're going to wind up storing it. Because insulin is like, you know, I can't get it into the cells. So I'm going to turn it into fat. So now it's going to go into your fat cells. Insulin also, the more insulin hangs around, insulin causes inflammation. And in a healthy person, the inflammation that insulin causes, it increases insulin-like growth factor, which causes your muscles to grow. That's a good thing. But if you're not particularly growing muscles and you have too much sugar around and you're resistant to that insulin, you get too much insulin-like growth factor. And it causes inflammatory compounds to be active. And then you start getting generalized inflammation in your body. It could be in your muscles. It could be in your immune system. It could be in your tendons. It could be your nerves. So if there's too much insulin around, it causes a lot of problems. So when you exercise, you increase your insulin sensitivity. Your insulin levels are lower because you don't need as much because your insulin can function more efficiently. You have less inflammation in your body. The other thing that happens when you have inflammation in your body is that the organs in your body have inflammation too. So if your liver is a little bit inflamed, it's not going to work as efficiently. And you need your liver to help you to metabolize your sugars, your fats, your proteins, to run your metabolism. It's not going to work as efficiently, and you're not going to be able to burn fat as readily. So if you exercise, your liver works better. Everything works better. Your kidneys work better. When you exercise, you also have increased vasculature. You have more blood vessels. You have more effective blood vessels. And the blood vessels that you have are clearer because you raise your HDL. when you have higher HDL, HDL runs around and cleans out your arteries for you. So your arteries are more clear. That means all the arteries that are feeding your organs have clear passageways for the blood to get into. Again, they're going to work more efficiently. If you have more vasculature and more efficient vasculature, guess where vasculature goes? Everywhere. Well, it doesn't go to your cartilage. The cartilage gets extracellular fluid bathed in it, but, you know, there's circulation near your cartilage. But otherwise, pretty much circulation goes everywhere. So why is that an advantage? Well, if you have good functioning circulation, all the healthy foods you eat, all the nutrients, your essential fats, your vitamins and minerals, again, are going to arrive at your cells in a more efficient fashion. And so that increased vasculature that you get from exercise, again, it's going to make your body work more efficiently, so you're going to be able to lose fat more efficiently. When you exercise, you have muscle hypertrophy. That means your muscles grow. You have more muscle cells, and your muscles, depending on what you're doing, your muscles may grow bigger, but you do increase the number of muscle cells you have. Having more muscle cells is a good thing because muscle cells are highly energized tissue. And muscle cells have cool stuff in them. Like they have lots of mitochondria because muscle cells move. So if you move the muscles, you have more cells, you have more mitochondria. Mitochondria give you energy. And if you support your mitochondria and make them energetic, you're going to have more energy. So you're going to have more mitochondrial factors like carnitine and coenzyme Q10 and B vitamins, all of those are going to be in greater supply, and you're going to feel healthier, more energetic, and you're going to want to exercise more. Muscle mass takes energy to maintain, and your body caters to it. So when you're sitting around listening to Radio Naturopath, or I'm sitting here, you know, looking at Ron after I did my little weight training routine this morning, I'm sitting here with my muscle cells. My muscle cells are repairing because I did some weight training this morning, and I'm burning more calories than if I hadn't done that. Because when you have more fat cells, when you have more muscle cells are very energetically active. And when you do resistance training, you have afterburn. Anything that builds your muscles. I mean, they say you don't have afterburn from cardio the way you have from resistance training. And that may be true, but I would argue that if during your cardio routine you did some bursts, you did some interval training, that you are going to have some afterburn. If anything you do that builds muscle, so even if it's so-called just cardio, if you run or you walk or you ride a bike and you're building muscle from that, you're still going to have afterburn. Anytime you build muscle, there's that afterburn phenomenon, and there's that ongoing burn phenomenon, so that you do have a metabolic advantage from having more muscle mass around. It may not be an enormous advantage, but it's definitely an advantage. And the advantage goes beyond the fact that you burn more calories at rest. The advantage goes to the fact that by having more muscle mass, by definition, you're going to have more energy. You're going to be more likely to exercise, and you're going to be more likely to perpetuate your positive cycle of continuing to exercise. So exercise has a lot of benefits that way. Again, when you increase circulation, you're increasing circulation through all of your organs of detoxification. So your liver, your lymphatics, and your kidneys all benefit. And because they benefit, you're going to detoxify more compounds from your body. Now, you're sitting here, you know, we're all sitting around talking right now. We're all sitting around and metabolizing. And while we're metabolizing, we're making breakdown products from our metabolism. So those things have to get excreted through liver, kidneys, and lymphatics. So if you're exercising, you're going to do all of that more efficiently. Also, we live in a world where there's toxins in the environment, and it's really hard to not be impacted by those. I mean, you have to basically live in a pristine environment. And, you know, here in stores, it's probably better than some other places. It's better than Beijing, I'm sure. But it's, you know, there's cars. We drove here in cars. There's cars all over campus. There's construction going on. You know, we have, there's preservatives in your food. There's toxins in the environment. There's pesticides. There's chemicals. You know, we have cleaning products. There's all kinds of stuff around. So your body is impacted by those things. And unfortunately, each one of us, if you were to take samples of our blood, there's thousands of chemicals in our bodies. So you have an advantage if you sweat, and you have an advantage if you push circulation through your organs of detoxification more frequently. If you carry less body fat as well, your body will protect you from those toxins by storing some of them in your body fat. So if you burn that body fat, you're going to excrete some of those toxins just because there's nowhere for them to go. And they're going to come out just in your from your emunctories, your organs of excretion, your, again, your liver, kidneys, lymphatics, and your sweat. So getting exercise gets rid of extra toxins. If you have extra toxins in your body doesn't work as efficiently. And when your body is less efficient, your metabolism doesn't work as well. You're going to be at a higher weight. So exercise isn't as simple as calories in, calories out. None of it is. There are so many reasons why exercise is, it helps you with fat loss beyond just the caloric burn. Because of the increased vasculature. Also, you breathe better when you, one way, if you're having trouble with something, a good way to take care of the thing you're having trouble with is to practice it. So people who have breathing issues, whether you have shortness of breath because you're deconditioned, because you're not exercising a lot, if you then go to condition yourself, you're going to be able to breathe better. So your breathing is going to improve. And if you have asthma or if you have allergies, if you go out and you breathe more, your lungs and your whole respiratory system is going to work better and it's going to work more efficiently. So every system in your body benefits from exercise. And the big thing is, more than the caloric burn, exercise makes your body more efficient. And so that So that on the whole, you're going to have more success with fat loss than from just dieting or changing your diet alone, for reasons that go way beyond just burning extra calories. And then it also depends on what kind of exercise you do. And you're going to get some benefit from any exercise I do. That's why I hesitate to say, it's not good to just go walking, because if you just go for a walk, you're not doing any interval training. And you can't say that to people, because most of the people in my practice, most Americans don't exercise enough to make a difference in their health. And most Americans pretty much don't exercise. That's the stat. That's the sad stat, that most people don't. It's something like 5 to 10% of people in the United States exercise enough to make a difference in their health. And then in terms of whether they exercise at all, the number's a little bit higher. But, it's more than 50% don't have any consistent form of exercise that they do. And so, by the way, if you are a server in a banquet hall, or you have or you clean houses, or you clean commercially, or you are you work construction, or you, work in a warehouse, that counts as exercise. One of the things I like to do is when I have patients who part of their work causes them to be very physically active, I ask them to put on a pedometer. And there's a couple of ways to do the pedometer. If you don't have a smartphone, you can just buy a pedometer if you want to. You can get pedometers, and sometimes you can get them for free. Sometimes they're premiums you'll sign up for health insurance and they'll give you a pedometer, because you can get pedometers pretty cheaply. And you can get pedometers at, discount stores, and you can get them at fitness stores. And then, of course, some people have all the different versions of fitness trackers, like your Fitbit and your Garmin and your Jawbone Up and your, oh my goodness, there's so many of them out there now. Pick your favorite. Those will track your steps for you. Also, if you do have a smartphone, your smartphone will count your steps for you. If you have an Apple phone, Apple Health is on your phone. You just have to set it up and it runs in the background. You don't even have to remember to turn it on. It will track your steps for you. If you have an Android phone, Google Fit is on there. I'm not that excited about Google Fit, because I think it doesn't track steps accurately. And then there are free apps out there that you can use to help to track your steps. There's a number of them. One of the ones that I recommend to people is Pacer Pedometer. And there's no charge for it, and you can use it. And again, it runs in the background, and you can look at your pacer pedometer, and it'll give you notifications. Hey, you took this many steps today. And it's very motivating. You can get an account and log in, and you can get a fitness coach, and you can use the pacer pedometer to motivate you to walk. And that's probably not the only pedometer app. There's all the Map My This, That, and the Other Thing apps that will track your steps. And there's some of them will track steps and some of them just track your heart rate and your distance.
Right. But I know that most of the Apple products are tracking your steps.
Yeah. They well, Apple that. Health definitely does.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
yeah.
so does Google
And I think
Fit.
Google too. If
yeah,
you, if
Google
you,
Fit.
If you have
yep.
the luxury of having a device like that.
Right.
Yep.
But that and the other thing you can do is if you don't have a device, you can just count your steps.
Well, you can do that.
Which could be, that's probably a little crazy making, but all right.
Well, it is, but, you know, and if you want to know how many steps there are in your mile, you go to a local track, which
yeah.
there are everywhere. You
right.
know, every high school, middle school in our area has
and
a
university.
Track. And university, too. And you can just count your steps going around the track, and then you'll know
right.
exactly how many there are, because everyone's steps are going to be different.
Right.
Because you're, you know, obviously I have very long legs, you have very short legs, and we have a different stride.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, so if you and I walk at the same, how shall I say? If you and I take the same amount of steps, let's put it that way. If you and I take the same amount of steps at the same time, you'll be, you know, down the road from me. In order for me to keep up with you, I have to turn my legs over. I think we figured out about 1.5 times to your one.
I have long levers.
You have long levers, and I have short levers.
You have short levers.
It's pretty
That's
funny.
What it is.
Yeah.
So you just got to turn your levers over faster.
Yeah.
Spin.
It's good times. You have to spin, exactly.
Right.
Yeah, when you have little levers, that's what you
that's
wind up having
gotta
to
do. That's what you got to do.
Yeah, so exercise does help with fat loss, but it's not entirely the way you thought. It's because the take-home is that it makes your body more efficient. There was one more organ that I didn't address in terms of fitness, and that's your brain. So let's take the example of Alzheimer's. There's theories now that where they're talking about Alzheimer's as type 3 diabetes. What that means is that they're concerned about glycation in the brain. Glycation is when sugars attach to proteins and render those proteins less or non-functional. So proteins are supposed to be smooth and supple and slippery, and when they're not glycated, they are. When they become glycated, they become brittle and they can break, and they're prone to more free radical damage. So when you get glycation in the lens of your eye, you get cataracts. When you get glycation of blood vessels, you can get things like retinopathy, kidney failure, and you can lose toes. When you get glycation in the nerve cells of your brain or anywhere, you get neurodegeneration. And so Alzheimer's, the concern there is that there's too much sugar going to the brain and therefore glycation going on. And so one of the things that happens, again, when you get exercise, you increase your insulin sensitivity. And glucose is cleared from your blood more readily. Your fasting glucose is going to be lower, and you're not going to have as much sugar going to your brain, and so you're not going to have the excess sugar causing glycation in your brain. We know that people who exercise regularly have better cognitive function. And it's very simple. If you're going into the brain and you're clearing out sugars so that you have less glycation, you're going to have more active and effective nerves. You have less free radical damage to the nerves because all of the toxins that are being cleared from the brain. So you're going to have less neurodegeneration that way. And also atherosclerosis. When your cardiovascular disease, of course, when you exercise, you have less cardiovascular disease. In addition to the coronary arteries that feed the heart, so your coronary arteries get cleaned out by HDL, high-density lipoprotein will run around and pull cholesterol out of your arteries and keep your coronary arteries clear. Well, they also clear the carotid arteries, keep the arteries that go to the brain clear as well. So you have more circulation going to the brain all the time. Also, once again, when you are in a bout of exercise, your heart is beating faster and many more times per minute than it's beating when you're sitting at rest. So you're getting all that circulation washing through all of your organs and systems and your brain and everything many more times. So the more times that all of that circulation sees those organs, again, it can clean stuff out. You get more HDL looking at the arteries, pulling out cholesterol. You get more minerals visiting all of the cells, and you get more removal of toxins. Everything, all the benefits of circulation happen many more times when you get regular exercise. So in that way, it's really good for you, and your whole body works better. If your brain is clearer and you have better cognition, you're more likely to want to do things emotionally to help yourself, and you're going to have more energy to do them. So that's another way that exercise helps fat loss. It just helps in so many ways. Now, getting over to what people have in common who have lost 30 pounds and kept it off. So almost all of them change their diet in some way. So if you're eating food and you're at a weight you don't want to be at, and you're continuing to be at a weight you don't want to be at, you have to change what you're doing. Now, the question is, what should you change it to? One of the things that was discovered was that there's a lot of scientific studies that find that, guess what the best diet for everybody is?
The one that works for them.
Right. Very good. Exactly. Yeah. That means that some people are going to do very well on a modified carbohydrate diet, which is basically what you and I do. Like, we don't eat zero carbs.
No.
Also, our preferred form of exercise is basically a cardio exercise, so we kind of need the carbs. And yet there are probably some people that can do a lot less carbs than we do and do the activity that we do. But Ron and I are types that we have to eat at least some carbohydrate. For me to be at a healthy weight, I need to eat less carbohydrates than Ron does because my body is different from his. I have people who cut their carbs way, way down, and they find that they still can't lose fat. And I have people who come in and find that, remember, we had Scott Brown on here a few weeks ago, and I have some other patients who have discovered that ketogenesis is for them. So ketogenesis is where you drop your carbs so low that you go into ketosis, that you start burning fat and using ketones for energy. Some people, that works really well. If I did that, I would hate life and I would cry. And I'm not saying that you shouldn't do that, because some people do ketogenic diets and they do wonderfully well. Some people do better as vegetarians, whether it's ovo-lacto vegetarians or complete vegans. Some people do great that way and they feel healthier. I have patients who come in and they're like, I can't eat meat. I just can't. They can't eat any kind of animal protein. They perhaps can eat dairy and eggs, or perhaps can just eat dairy. And some of them can't even do that. But they find that if they eat animal protein, like any kind of animal protein, we're talking fish, chicken, poultry, pork, doesn't matter, beef, they just can't digest it. And they feel much better when they don't eat it. And even myself, I do better if I don't eat a lot of that stuff. I don't digest that stuff as well as I do plant-based foods. So I eat some of those things, and then I eat a lot of produce and a little bit of grain, but mostly, you know, mostly produce. I eat a little bit of dairy. And that's what works for me. I would say that, and then carb-wise, I kind of watch my carbs. I try not to overdo carbs. I also practice some form of intermittent fasting. So I'll spend a good long time of many days not eating. So like I'll have my last, you know, I often will have a snack at 11 o'clock at night. But I may not eat again until for another 10 to 12 hours. So I might not, like today I haven't eaten yet. And that works for me. And if that doesn't work for you, you shouldn't do it, okay? But intermittent fasting works for some people. And there's a couple ways to do intermittent fasting. One way is to have a long span of what my nice rep from Integrative Therapeutics came in yesterday, Kim Carlson, and she said a phrase to me that made a lot of sense to me. She said, gut rest. What a great term, gut rest. It's a good idea to give your gut rest. When you do that, you give your gut some time to repair itself. Again, guess what? When you rest, you give time to repair, and you get to, your digestive system becomes more efficient when you have gut rest. So if you're able to eat dinner Early, that's another way to do it. Simply eat dinner early, maybe be done with your dinner by 6 o'clock p.m., and then don't eat again until 8 o'clock the next morning. You're getting 14 hours of gut rest. That's very good for you if you can do it. If you can't do it, it's okay. Don't do it. But gut rest is a good thing in general. And so it just depends on how much gut rest you get. If your body, if you're eating a diet where you're generally not inflamed, you may not need the gut rest and you can eat more frequently through the day. Some people need to eat frequent small meals. Some people need to space their meals apart. And I do a little bit better with spacing my meals and, again, having some gut rest. That, you know, would have my body do a reset. So if I ate a really, really big meal last night, I'm probably not going to eat again until I'm hungry. And that's another thing that people do who have kept weight off. They eat when they're hungry. They don't eat on a schedule necessarily. They eat when they feel like they need to eat, and they don't eat when they don't. So that's important. The different diets work for different people. Some people do really well on a diet that's mostly non-starchy vegetables and protein and no fruit and no carbs. Then some people feel fantastic doing that. Some people don't feel fantastic doing that at all. I can do a version of that, but I have to eat fruit because I need some of those carbs. I just can't, my body just can't handle not having some source of quicker carbohydrate, especially when you do a cardio form of exercise. It's going to be harder to do it without the carbohydrates. I'm not saying it's not possible because, as I said, there are some people who do cardio exercise and they do it ketogenically. And in fact, when you're doing long cardio, it is a good idea to develop your ability to be what's called fat adapted. So if you are doing long bouts of exercise and you find that you have to eat every hour or so, some people need to do that. Some people absolutely need to do that, but some people don't need to eat as much of that. And I find that, you know, I go out and I do my intervals in the morning and I don't eat first. And I do fine doing my intervals. And the fact that I can do that means that I'm fat adapted. Whereas Ron couldn't do that because it's not as much that he's fat adapted, not fat adapted, is that he has different metabolism from me. But being fat adapted means that you're going to reach into your fat stores because you have tens of thousands of calories stored as fat. Whereas you only have, you're going to burn through your glycogen pretty quickly, you know, within an hour or so. You can burn through all of your stored glycogen, whereas your fat, you have hours and hours and hours of stored fat. And if you can dip into that, that's a great thing. And so the less you need to eat during a workout, the more fat adapted you're going to be and the more fat you're going to burn. So that's interesting. So the diet that's going to work for you is, like Ron said, it's going to be the one that works for you. And there's so many different ones. There's different proportions. And that's what's frustrating because this article did state that scientists saw that you could put three people on the same diet and two would lose weight and one wouldn't and one would gain weight. And they were baffled by this. And I can say, well, look, they have genetic individuality. There's biochemical individuality, and people are going to respond differently to different foods. And it's also based on how efficient their body is at that time. It's not just genetic. It's also how they're expressing those genetics and what their exposures have been, how many toxins are in their bodies, what else they're doing. It all depends. It depends on a lot of different things, how efficiently you're going to be able to process and how efficiently you're going to be able to lose fat. So those people who kept the 30 pounds or more off, 98% changed their diet in some way. So like I said, if you're eating a certain way, you're not at a weight you like, you're going to have to change something. In fact, if something's going on in your life and you don't like what's going on, you're going to have to change something. Because what's the definition of the definition of insanity is doing something the same way over and over again and expecting to get different results.
There you go.
So if something's going on you don't like, something's got to give. You got to change something. Now, Melinda Irwin, who is a professor of epidemiology at the Yale School of Public Health, said a person can eat almost anything if the portion size is appropriate. I have a problem with that statement.
Okay.
Because, first of all, what if you're food intolerant to it? And second of all, what if you're highly carbohydrate sensitive versus what if you're not? So that doesn't take into account biochemical individuality. So that's my main problem with that statement, that no, you can't eat almost anything if the portion size is appropriate. If you react poorly to the food, that doesn't make sense. If you react healthfully to the food, then it's true. So I would amend that to say, given that the person has no biochemical reactions or intolerances to the food. All right. So this is the other. So people who keep their weight off, those 30 pounds off in the registry, 90% exercise on average 1 hour a day. So not only do they get regular exercise, but they average 1 hour a day.
Consistency.
So I tried to figure out if I'm exercising in the average 1 hour a day. So I don't exercise every day. I usually miss one day a week. But on the average, I exercise, in the tens, something like that.
You exercise a lot.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm looking, like, Time Magazine has this, they have a little, you know, questionnaire thing here, and it's at least an hour every day or two or three times a week. Well, what if it's in between?
What if it's in between?
Yeah, the question is, how often do you exercise, at least?
No, the hour a day is on the average. So that means if you average,
if you're doing 10 hours a week, then.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. So if you're doing, you're going to do, because what happens to me is today I'm going to exercise. Well, probably I'm going to do a lot today because I'm going to go out into some hills, and I'll probably exercise a total of, it might be as much as, because I already did half an hour. Yeah. It's going to be 2 to 2.5 hours today because I'm going to go out and do a longer ride. But tomorrow I'm going to go out probably and do an hour and 10, an hour and 15. And then Friday I'm probably not going to exercise at all. Saturday, it's anybody's guess because it depends what time we get to the farm to fork.
Right.
Because if I have time to sneak out for a little spin, I'll do that. But
if
I have to.
If we get there early enough, you can do that.
I can do a little spin, right? Yeah. But I have to work, so.
We'll just have to hopefully plan on that because we have to get there on Saturday.
Right? Yes.
I think it's Saturday.
So. So 90% exercise on average 1 hour a day, which doesn't necessarily mean 1 hour every day. It means on the average. So they exercise, you know, and one of the things that has been studied to be helpful for people's insulin resistance, and I've said this over and over again, is go long one day a week, go long. And I beg people to do this. And people have such a hard time with it. And
just push the extremes, you know, just push it a little bit. You know, and
I, you know, because I've said to people, just one day a week, go out for longer than you usually go. And unfortunately, a lot of people aren't exercising consistently to start with.
Right.
So if I say to them, so go out for a 2 hour walk, and I've had people's jaws drop. Yeah. To go out for just
What's 2 hours?
Right. One day a week. But if they're not accustomed to walking for half an hour, 2 hours is a lot. I'm trying to say to them, listen, whatever your longest workout is right now. So if your longest workout is 10 minutes, go out for 20 on the weekend.
Right. Double it. Double what your regular longest workout is. So, if you get a 15 or 20 minute walk, then double it. And at least then you're pushing the long aspect.
Right.
It's pretty
because
simple.
You get so much, and the other piece is when you do that long bout of exercise, the pace doesn't matter. You just go long. You can that's not a day to do your intervals. That's a day to just walk and enjoy the scenery and do a stroll or whatever.
Right.
But go long. And the longer you that's a day where the longer you go, but to fatigue, I mean if you're tired, don't keep pushing yourself if you're exhausted. But, one day a week, go long. That's something that really helps, too. All right. And the tip is go slow and steady. So this is the other thing. 78% eat breakfast every day of the people who kept their weight off. So that's interesting because I don't eat breakfast every day. Some people, so that means that 22% do not eat breakfast every day and still manage to keep the weight off. So that's going to depend on what your needs are. And if you need that gut rest you do better with getting away from food, you're going to do a little bit better if you don't eat breakfast. So they say, there's that idea that breakfast is the most important meal of the day. And I agree with that to a point. Breakfast is the most important meal of the day, if it's the most important meal of the day for you. If that works for you, then eat that breakfast. What you eat for breakfast can also matter. And it, again, it all depends on what works for you and what doesn't. You know, if you come to me and you're eating some kind of cereal with fruit for breakfast and you have a cup of coffee with that, and I do your numbers and you have beautiful blood sugar and your A1C, your hemoglobin A1C, which is your level of glycation, the level of the degree to which the cells of your body are attached to sugars. If your hemoglobin A1C is really low, like it's, you know, 5.2 or less, and you're having cereal for breakfast and you're having, you know, some kind of a sandwich for lunch with protein in it, and you're having protein and vegetables for dinner, and you're otherwise happy and healthy, I'm going to say, mazel tov. Eat that. But if you come in and you have a hemoglobin A1C that's over 6, and you're having that cereal for breakfast, I'm going to probably make another suggestion, because you're doing something that's increasing your hemoglobin A1C. So 78% of these people eat breakfast every day, but that's, like I said, 22% do not.
Breakfast is good.
Breakfast is good if it's good. It's only good if it's good. It's not good if it's not.
I know.
Yeah, because some people, because it says here that 78% of people, of these people who kept the weight off successfully, ate breakfast.
Ate breakfast, yeah.
Which means that 22% didn't.
Right.
So those 22% don't eat breakfast every day. And I'm one of
those. You don't eat breakfast every day.
That's right. I don't. I find, because of the principle of gut rest works for me.
Right.
It doesn't work for you.
Not me.
But I'm more fat adapted than you. So that means that I can burn fat as a fuel more readily than I dip into my fat stores more readily. You just don't have as many, and you're not as fat adapted. You know, and I don't eat as many carbs as you do. So, that's what works for me.
Right.
So 45% of the people who kept the weight off weren't on a diet program, which means that 55% were. So, getting some kind of a program where you're following some kind of a program can be helpful. That's what this is suggesting. It's just about 50-50. But 45%, that's almost half of the people, were not on any diet program. So let's speak to that a little bit. So if that means that 55% were, which means that they found a program of some sort that worked for them, whether it's South Beach or whether it's paleo or low carb or ketogenic or vegetarian or you name it, they have some kind of a rule that they follow. I'm not sure what I would say about me, because I'm not following a specific program right now, but there are certain specific things that I do. I definitely watch my carbs. I definitely don't eat gluten. I definitely eat a lot of vegetables and fruit and clean protein. I'm not a vegetarian. But the things that are sort of rules that I follow are, I modify my carbs. Like if there's a way to reduce the carbs in a meal, I probably will. So in favor of having more protein and produce. You know, so you'll see me at the restaurant. I'm probably not going to get the pasta. I'm probably going to get the stir fry with protein, and I'm probably going to get the big salad with protein. That's what you'll see. And so I do that. So I modify my carbohydrates. I don't eat the bread at the restaurant because the bread's always gluten, and I avoid gluten.
Yeah.
Although I shouldn't say I 100% avoid gluten, because I don't worry about non-dedicated facility. I don't always worry about natural flavors, and I do eat einkorn. But I don't eat a lot of einkorn.
Right.
I mean, I eat
once a week, at most.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right,
right, because I don't eat a lot of pasta.
Right,
right. So we'll have maybe a pasta dinner once a week. The rep came and brought us lunch, so we have leftover Indian food. So I'll probably eat a little bit of rice.
I'll eat some of that.
Yeah, that's very nice. So finding a diet program that works for you might be helpful for you, whether it's Weight Watchers, whether it's Slimming World, whether it's South Beach, whether it's Whole30, whether it's you know, just tracking your data on an app, which is actually a different, which is a different thing. That is something I do too. I track what I eat. Don't just write everything down you eat. You can also write down how you feel, what's going on in your life, and then you'll have your thought patterns and see what triggers you to eat. So that's really, that can be really helpful. There's good studies that show that people who track what they eat and exercise do better than people that don't.
I was going to say, writing it down does help.
It really helps. Well, I find the app really helpful. And there are many apps that you can use that to track your food. Lose It is one. MyFitnessPal is another one. I think you can use Google. I don't know about Google Fit, but you can use Apple Health to track
you sure
as
can.
Well.
Yep.
Spark People. There's many apps. Use the one that you like the best. And tracking just by writing it down on a piece of paper or just typing it into Word file works too. However, the thing about the apps that track for you is that you get a calorie and a nutrition total for that day.
Right.
Or if you're doing Weight Watchers, you get a points total.
So they're giving you a little more scientific approach to it.
They're giving you, yes, it's scientific, mm-hmm. but also you can make choices based on that. So you can see, oh, I've had this many calories today, or I've had this much protein or this much carbohydrate. Maybe I won't have this higher carbohydrate food. I actually do that. I look at my journal and I'll go, all right, should I eat that thing or not? It helps you make decisions.
Right.
And so, again, it's just a mindfulness tool. So that's what I said. 45 didn't use a weight loss program. 55% did.
Mm-hmm.
So Dean Schillinger says, avoid all sugary drinks. They provide empty calories and produce belly fat. That's fine. But what if you like them and you want a little bit of those? So I say that's a good plan, because if you drink nothing but water, that can be really helpful. If one of your gigs is that you're drinking, you know, you're going to the convenience store and getting the 32-ounce soda, if that's your gig. But if I want a little bit of cola, I have a little bit of cola. And I have it on a day that I exercised, and I have 5 or 6 ounces, and then I drink water, right? So I try to restrict. If I'm going to have something that's very high calorie, I'm not going to have a lot of it, and that's how I do it. So if you really love Pepsi, have 6 ounces, if you can do that, or have it only on a day that you've gotten a lot of exercise. So 75% weigh themselves at least once a week. So that's what we were talking about. Some people weigh themselves, which means that 25% don't. And I'm in that 25%. I don't weigh myself once a week. But, you know, again, I'm keeping that weight off. So weighing is another way of tracking. And that can be really helpful. 62% watch fewer than 10 hours of TV per week, which again means that 38% watch more. So watching TV is a problem for a number of reasons. Of course, if you're watching TV, you're sedentary. You're not moving around. If you're watching TV, especially late at night, you're not sleeping. Adequate sleep is necessary for fat loss, because you need a break from life, because that's a great way to lower cortisol, your fight or flight, your stress hormones. Fight or flight stress hormones put sugar into your blood and make you gain weight. So if you're finding that you're really stressed out and you're gaining weight, that may be why. And high cortisol will tend to put fat onto your belly. It'll give you a little pooch. And so watching TV makes it so that you don't sleep. And when you're not spending time sleeping, you're not resting as much as you would be as if you were sleeping. That's one of the issues. The other issue is that when you watch TV, you tend to eat. People tend to snack in front of the TV. TV doesn't help, because TV advertises a lot of different foods. So that's a reason why TV will make you, can tend to make you gain weight. So watching less TV can be really helpful. The average amount of weight lost by registry members is 66 pounds. 5.5 is the average number of years of sustained weight loss. So people manage to sustain their weight loss for at least 5.5 years. So that's interesting. Whatever plan you use, you want one that helps to address hunger. And a lot of people fail their diets because hunger erodes willpower. That's what Susan Roberts says. She's from Tufts. And so you have to find ways to help your hunger. And one of the things that, you know, in studying metabolic diets, things like that, is that protein, fat, and fiber, and also cocoa, help with cravings, and also with hunger. Protein, fat, and fiber are going to help with hunger. So remember, there's a difference between hunger and cravings. Hunger is in your body. It's when your body is asking you to eat food because it desires nutrition. And cravings are in your head. And cravings are like, emotionally, you really want to eat that food. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's really nothing wrong with, you know what, I really want to go and get that drink from the local cafe place that you really like to eat. You just have to fit it into your life. If you're having one of those and it's high calorie and you're having it every day and you're not getting exercise and you're stressed and you're not eating a healthy diet otherwise, it's going to be harder on you. But if you're doing a plan where most of the time you're eating really healthfully and you want to fit in a frappe, frappuccino, you know, fizzy thing, you know, ice creamy thing, you could do that if you want to.
I have a quick question here. We had a caller that called in and was wondering, he's gone to, look at all these things. It's Bruce from Lebanon, and he's looked at calorie estimates, and the calorie estimates make him gain weight. What's your perspective on that? Not all those are alike.
Calorie estimates on what?
If you go and you go to a website or an app or whatever, and you put in your age and all the information, your pertinent information, and it tells you you're supposed to eat X number of calories a day to maintain yourself. And if he does that, he gains weight.
Did that estimate's not right for him?
It's not. Got that, Bruce. I'm sure he's laughing right now.
So the problem is that he used a website, and the website gives you general information. And so it's not individualized. So you have to figure out what works for you. So part of the problem with this whole deal is that there's a lot of trial and error. That this is a diet plan. This is a piece of paper, and you are a person. And people are not pieces of paper.
No.
So you have to figure out what works for you. So so there's calorie estimates again. So you have a calorie estimate of what it says that you can eat to maintain. And then, of course, if you want to lose, you have to drop some of those calories. Because fat loss happens as a result of calories restriction in the setting of hormonal balance. You have to have both of those things going on. If you restrict calories and you're very stressed, you may not be able to lose weight. Sometimes you can not restrict calories, go on vacation, and lose weight.
Right.
Because you're not stressed. Because stress is a big factor with weight gain and fat loss.
So you should vacation more.
Yeah. Well, the less stressed you are, the easier it is to lose fat. Absolutely, because cortisol makes you gain weight because it puts sugar into your blood.
You know, the French take a month off and they don't look like they're very fat.
No, well,
there's another factor. There's a lot of factors.
There's
there,
many
sure.
factors yeah, there. Right. Their lifestyle is different. What they
their
eat is
diet's
different.
Diet's better.
How they don't drive as much as we do. They walk to get places. Mm-hmm. They spend a lot of time eating, meaning that they spend a long time at their meal, which means they eat slowly, which means they ultimately eat less.
Eating is a social event.
And they're less stressed when they eat.
Right.
So there's many, many reasons for that. That's a different lifestyle.
Right.
So the thing is that there is a lot of trial and error. And also, a calorie is not a calorie. You know, I'll say it again. 200 calories of donut is not the same as 200 calories of chicken breast. They don't behave in your body the same way. A calorie is just a measurement of how much energy it takes to burn a certain proportion of that food to ash. It doesn't tell you how that food is going to behave in your body. If you eat protein, your body's going to look at that, break it down into amino acids, and then it's going to use it to rebuild your body. So you're not going to gain weight on it in the same way that you would. Whereas if you ate empty carbohydrates, your body's just going to break those down very easily, use what it needs for energy, and store the rest as fat. So it all depends on what you're eating. So if you're eating 1,700 calories of non-starchy vegetables, protein, maybe a little bit of whole grain, maybe a little bit of starchy food, but predominantly non-starchy vegetables, less sweet fruits, you know, clean protein, and, you know, very little extra stuff. That's going to be different than if you're eating a diet that's higher in starch, lower in produce. Maybe there's some alcohol thrown. And alcohol also is something that can cause weight gain, and people forget about that. If you have too much alcohol, it's not just the calories, it's because it hijacks your liver, and your liver has to be busy detoxifying that alcohol rather than doing the metabolism that you want it to do. So there's some fine-tuning that needs to happen. And to speak to Bruce's concern, it may be an issue of the proportions of the different types of things he's eating in terms of those calories. And it can also be that that generalization for that calorie in that calculator, that doesn't work for him. And it may be that he has to eat less, or it may be, you know, it's actually what you're eating, the actual food items that you're eating, and you have to tweak that. When you find the proportion of macronutrients, fats, protein, and carbohydrate that works for you, then you usually find something that's going to work. All right, I'm going to go now. That was fun. You've been listening to 91.7 FM, WHUS Doors. I am Fran Storch. I've been here with my co-host, Ron Meniza.
Hello.
Yeah. And if you'd like to listen to this, if you didn't get to hear all of this episode, it will be up on whus.org probably within the week, and will also be available to download from iTunes. You can write me anytime at radionaturopath@gmail.com. Questions, comments, interest in participating on the show. You can also go to my Facebook page, which is Fran Storch ND, naturopathic physician, at Radio Naturopath. And you can participate in any conversations there. All right, we'll be back next week with more Radio Naturopath here on WHUS 91.7 FM.